Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Welcome to Rewiring Your Life. My name is Erica Spiegelman and my wonderful co-host,
Marcia Stone.
There she is, is with me today. And we are so excited to bring you all, our wonderful audience, shows that create community, support, and give wellness tips. And today we have on two wonderful women who are changing the world of recovery. And we are so excited that they're both here today. We rarely get to have two people that are working together. We have Christina Wanzelak, who is a nationally recognized and respected interventionist, addiction expert, author, docuseries host, and media consultant. Christina has built a big company that has a lot of different parts, which we're gonna get to and see all that she does. And our other guest is Anika Cooper, who founded Simply Grace in 2011, and by 2013, Simply Grace has taken shape as a nonprofit sober living home designed for women. She's also now working with Christina on Full Circle Intervention, which is part of Christina's company, Full Circle Addiction and Recovery Services, and helping people recover, giving people hope and tools for a better life. So welcome, ladies. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, there's so much in people's bios, and I was looking into what you guys do and, you know, all the things you've been involved in, and it's, you know, there's layers and layers. So we'll just let you guys kind of, you know, take it from here. Can you tell us a little bit about each of your backgrounds and how you came to meet each other and what you're doing now?
Yeah, thank you. This is Christina Wanzelak, and I've been working in the field of addiction and addiction treatment and mental health disorders for 25 years, but I came into this line of work and this interest in work through my own recovery. So I have been clean and sober myself for 28 years.
And
I went to treatment. Yeah, thank you. I went to treatment when I was 21. I've been sober since. And, you know, I in my addiction, you know, it's a very dramatic story of addiction, which, you know, I wrote a memoir about, but I landed homeless in San Francisco. And the reason I'm sharing this with you is because it was only 28 years ago that I was eating in dumpsters, living on the streets in San Francisco. And when I sit back and I listen to that bio that you read, it always brings tears to my eyes to think that like addicted homeless kid, right, that I can go from eating in dumpsters to sitting on the set of Good Morning America in just, you know, such a short amount of time, which is why I have such passion around this work, by the way, because if I can change my life, anybody can change their life. And I feel great. It's been a wonderful way to spend my life being of service to others that are suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you. And part of that journey, of course, is being able to work with women like Anika, who is an extraordinary woman and brings to the table so much depth and wealth and excitement around recovery as well. So obviously, Anika, I'll let you jump in.
I hear the gratitude
in your voice. That was 28 years, and like I tried to put that in like 45 seconds.
That was wonderful. That was great. Yes,
well done.
Very well done.
That's right.
Very well done.
Well, this is Anika Cooper, and what you just heard from Christina is why, and I'm going to get emotional, is why I believe that we have reconnected and our spirits have joined again, because of our passion. And I am also in recovery. I've been sober since August 7th of 1995. So I'm coming up on 28 years, or is it 20? I can't remember. 27 years, August 7th. And I am forever grateful for that. And in that process, I, you know, went to detox for 7 days at the age of 19. And at 7 days, they asked me to leave because that was my insurance ran out. And so I did IOP and was told at 19, I had just turned 19, that sober living would be a good option for me. And I was like, there is no way. But in not wanting to go back to where I was, I ended up in sober living for a year and a half. And through that, I believe, through that experience, I have been sober now for, like I said, for a very long time. And I believe a lot of it, most of it, had to do with being in a sober living. So in 2011, I created a nonprofit from a vision that I had that I wanted, that I was supposed to help women in sober, in the sober living arena. And all of the things that I've done in my life with Simply Grace and other things have come, have been born out of a lot of pain and a lot of anguish. And I was going through a very painful time when God, I told God, either take my life or change it, because what I'm doing right now, and this is at 15 years sober, isn't working. And I can't seem to change. And I was working the steps, I was doing all the things, but that's when he gave me the vision for Simply Grace. And through that vision, I created, and his, obviously his works, I created a sober living for women. It started with one house. And when I departed Simply Grace, there were seven houses, including a Mommy and Me house, an IOP for women only, and a thrift store that provided not only clothing for the women that came through Simply Grace and other, the other community, Dallas-Fort Worth community. We provided clothes for anybody going to treatment. It also provided a community center type vibe for people in recovery. And that's what all created from, you know, God. And in that, I had fundraisers, and Christina was invited. We asked Christina, she was well spoken of because of her book, The Lost Years, and the things that she had been through. We asked her to come speak at my fashion show, which also Marsha, funny story, Marsha was going to speak at that fashion show a couple years before that.
We just missed each other, Christina.
Yeah. So y'all were, they were,
I was literally on a plane texting Anika because they were, we were getting ready to fly, like to fly from Austin to Dallas is like 35 minutes. And so I was just going to hop on a plane and go up there and speak and come home. And there was a bad storm that rolled in, and I've never been more ashamed in my life. I was texting Anika like, oh my God, it's 3 hours before the show. I can't get there. I'm so sorry. And she was so gracious. And I just got to tell this little story, Anika, because I'm going to brag on you a little bit. Like, we're both Texas girls. And if y'all don't know this, you know, Texas is sort of still like the good old boys club. And I think that's what drew me and Anika together, because she is just so fierce and so fearless. And actually, I'm going to point this question to Christina, because, you know, what I know about Anika is she has a heart for women that just gives me chills from my head to my toes. Is that one of the things that attracted you to her spirit?
Yes, completely. When I co-wrote my book with my mom, when mom and I went out to the fashion show, I was so taken back just sitting in the audience, you know, and watching these women that had nothing, right? In early recovery, you know, fighting their way through early recovery from addiction, walking this one, it's going to make me emotional, walking this runway. It was incredible.
That Anika set up, that was her dream, that was her vision.
And I, this is no lie. I was sitting there with my mom, and trust me, right? I have spoken it all over the country, actually all over the world. And I was sitting in that audience, and my thought was, and I don't know if I've ever had this thought before, but my thought was, whoever did this, that woman that did this, I need to know. Like this, I was called, it was like a calling to know her. Do you know what I mean? And I've never had that in a speaking event. Many are just transactional, if that makes sense. But this was heartfelt. It was moving. It was inspirational. And all I knew is when I left there is I wanted to know her. I wanted to be around her, and I wanted to incorporate her in some way, right? Like, we needed to come together. She and I needed to do something together. that's how we came.
Oh,
to
that
be.
Makes me so happy. That makes amazing. Me happy for y'all. That's kind of like me and you, Erica, in a way too. You know, not quite as dramatic, but still, you feel that pull.
Yeah,
almost like a pull of the universe for people that you're supposed to be connected with and do, you know, work to help others with.
Well, I was supposed to speak on behalf of BRC for Marsha, and somebody set us up basically and said, you know, because I wrote a book called Rewired, and I have a rewired program, and you know, I have, you know, just a bunch of tools for people in sobriety, and for I work with clients. I'm sober myself, and someone said you have to meet Marsha Stone, and she'd like you to speak, you know, on behalf of BRC at a conference for them. So that's how we met. It was amazing, and an instantaneous, you know,
connection.
You just feel it, you know, when people are in the right place.
I love that.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah, it is. It is so amazing.
Well, I just wanted to kind of circle back around to how. So she came and spoke at the fashion show, and we both looked at each other and said, I don't know how or when, but we're going to work together. And I guess it's been 3 years. Last year in, I believe it was March, I reached out to her because I saw her like something on my Instagram. And I was like, oh my God, Christina likes something on my Instagram. And so I reached out to her and she's like, let's set up a call. And I was like, what? Okay. And we started doing Zoom calls. This is when I was still with Simply Grace. And we were doing Zoom calls just randomly. We didn't know why we were doing them. We were just like, let's just meet and be friends. And so we were meeting, we were doing FaceTime every week. And lo and behold, April 2nd, did I know that my world was about to change forever. And I was no longer with Simply Grace. And I was talking to Christina and I go, I want to learn from you. I want to do what you're doing and I want to do it with you. And she's like, you know, I'm sure she's had a lot of people, and I know she has, a lot of people have tried to work with her and be on her, you know, on her team. And in this industry, you have to be very selective that your values match up with the person that you're working with. And they did at that time. And so we didn't even know that we were being pulled together for this moment and for this time. And it's just very powerful. And I'm forever grateful. And so I just wanted to show y'all, let y'all see how it kind of tied together and pulled us together to where we get to work with women and men now, with our passion combined and 50 something years of sobriety combined.
Amazing. Yeah. It's incredible. And I, you know, for me, I have a private practice where I see clients, you know, day to day through Zoom, and pretty much it's all telehealth these days that I'm doing, but it's so amazing to have other women, or to have people in general that have walked the walk every day, that, you know, have these values that are congruent with their actions. And, you know, I think that really does help people have faith that there is really hope, and that, you know, you guys have obviously we all have a story. I'm Marsha sober. I'm sober. It's four of us here today that are all sober women.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is incredible.
And powerhouse women, if I may say so.
Yeah. Exactly.
But no,
self-appointed.
But I think clients early on in recovery really relate to that. It's so important for them in a lot of ways, you know, and I just think that it's wonderful that there's so much authenticity, you know, obviously between the two of you and in your own lives. So I find that that's very helpful as well. And I just wanted to point that out, really. So what do you guys, in terms of challenges and that you face, that, you know, like just building this new, was this a new branch, the intervention, what you guys are doing with Full Circle Intervention? Is this, can you tell us a little bit about that and any?
Yeah, thank you for asking. This is Christina. I founded Full Circle Intervention in 1995. So many, many years ago, I launched out into a private intervention practice. And, you know, in regards to obstacles that I came up against, well, let me list many. The first is I was young. I was one of the only female in the country. I took on a wing of a prayer, left a full-time job and salary and health and benefits and all of it, and jumped into private practice and building an intervention practice all those years ago. By the way, intervention today, people know what intervention is. Back then, nobody knew. I had to describe it. People didn't know. When I said, I do intervention, working with families in crisis around addiction, nobody had any clue what I was talking about. So those were just some of the minor obstacles that I came up against, right? And just fighting my way, pushing water upstream against a male-dominated industry, against an industry that was not even quite developed at the time. That would be my biggest obstacles. And then moving into what I do today and what I've been doing the last 20 years, when I started intervention, the only model of intervention they had was this big surprise, kind of this intervention that had a surprise element to it. Many years ago, I felt deeply uncomfortable with that model. It just didn't resonate with me. I think so much of the disease of addiction is propelled by shame and secrets. And I felt like that model of intervention aligned with, in fact, it uses shame, right, to motivate people. You shame people into treatment by catching them off guard, by bringing their most loving family members and kind of catching them off guard, if that makes sense. And, you know, it takes people off at the knees, and it's very shaming. So many years ago, I thought, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just tell the truth and tell the addict about the intervention and invite them to come and let's see what happens. And so for the last 20 years, I've been doing a very respectful, you know, invitational or open model of intervention. Now, I do want to say, when I say invitation, the intervention is not contingent on whether the addict comes to the intervention or not. Mm-hmm. We have the intervention, right? My client is the family. I do intervention. So, right. So the addicted person is invited to join, right? Like the message from the family is, we're not okay anymore, right? We're not okay losing you. We're not okay. You may not be ready for change, but we are. You may not see that there's a problem, but we do. And we've decided to get help. We've hired Christina and Anika. We're doing a family intervention on such and such a day. We'd really like you to join us, but with or without you, our family's moving forward into health and recovery. So that would be, by the way, the other monumental obstacle for me in the beginning of my career is just kind of being a radical, out-of-the-box thinker that way, I guess. You know, it was not widely accepted what I did. And
I love that, though. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if it is.
Then you were following your heart.
It was a calling. That's right. And I think that there's no greater pain in sobriety than the existential angst of the unanswered call. And what I knew in when I would walk in and do that traditional intervention, I just wanted to grab the addict and run out the back door. Like, right? Like, I'm with you. I just couldn't do it. And I came to that crossroads in my career that if this is intervention, I'm out. But I don't know what out means because I don't want to do anything else. So I got to figure out a way that I can champion addicts and champion their families and help shift a family. And I don't know. So yeah, I had to answer the call. It wasn't a choice. You know, it wasn't a choice. So that's what I've been doing with intervention. And over the years, as you might expect, or, you know, the practice has grown and, you know, I'm full circle intervention is known nationally and internationally for respectful and loving, you know, an effective intervention. And along the way, I this is the other thing I realized about intervention. And maybe you relate to this, having a private practice. It's kind of lonely. It's kind of lonely. And so I love the idea of having Anika and her experience, her passion, her knowledge, but also that two women can align together and help families. And do you know what I mean? Like,
yes, for
it's
sure.
It's just been so great. And it's it's a private practice is lonely. And, you know, I've traveled all over the country by myself. So it's just been really fun to have somebody to share with.
Well,
somebody.
Anika is definitely
right?
fun.
Like I, That's right.
You yeah. know what I was thinking when you were talking
and by the
about
way, you have to. I feel like you have to. That's the other thing about the work, right? It's heavy work. It's heavy work. It's extraordinary, but it's yeah. also heavy. And it's been such a pleasure and a gift to be able to share with Anika, right? Like to have somebody to share that with has been such a pleasure. So that's full circle intervention. And Anika has been a wonderful addition. Well, not even a wonderful. Sells it short, but
I always hear this, you know, for people listening. I had a mother call me this week, and somebody I've been talking to for a while, her daughter, you know, was trying to get sober, trying to get help, and she was negotiating this with her daughter, so I was kind of guiding her. I'm not an interventionist, but I work with families a lot, and finally her daughter just went into treatment yesterday, which is great, but what I always tell, you know, the parents or whoever is the loved one of the person reaching out is, you know, as much as they need, this needs to be addressed, there's a lot to be addressed with you too. You know, there was so much enabling going on. There was very little boundaries. There was, you know, a lot of fear on this mother's end, which, you know, I know you guys see all the time. So I just love that you are putting it out there that this intervention is not, you know, it is about the addict or the person exhibiting these addictive behaviors, but it's more so for these families to understand how to cope and behave and what to do and how to create a new narrative for themselves and how to, like, you know, and behave differently and understand a whole new world that needs to come from it. Don't you agree? Like,
it's been my life's work, the, you know, alcoholism or chemical dependency disorder. It happens to families. It doesn't happen to individuals. And behind every great addict is an equally great codependent. And without collapsing the codependent structure, it is really difficult, if not impossible, or definitely very rare that families and addicts can come together in a healthy way that supports both family and in addict, if that makes sense. So, right, families descend
for sure
together, and ideally they ascend together. And in the addicted codependent relationship, right, which is addict and loved one by nature, the lowest functioning person sets the norm. So the whole family system is operating from a place of addictive rules and rigidity. So the whole family needs help. So yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think, you know, it's
kind of like that old saying that water seeks its own level, you know? And you know what I was just thinking about last week, Eric and I had an incredible guest. That's the chair of Rutgers Addiction Medicine School. I'm probably not saying that correctly, but she was incredible.
No, she's the head of the addiction. She's the head of the Addiction Research Center.
Research Center. That's right. Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah.
And, Research Institute. Yeah.
Yeah. And she had written this book about, you know, basically about genetics and, you know, sort of childhood predisposition to addiction. And Anika, I'm going to point this question to you. One of the things that we talked about during that interview was the sort of evolution and gradual lifting of stigma. I know you've been sober for a long time, and I just wonder, you know, I mean, it's a lot of years, and I know a lot of information, but just like in a nutshell, you know, what has it been like? And you know, do you think that stigma's changing?
Oh, gosh. I think that's a great question. So when I first got clean, it was, you know, I was just in my little bubble of I did NA for actually 20 something years, and I was just in my bubble of NA. So I really wasn't aware of the stigma and, like, because we were all hanging out with each other. I know that my dad, like the first, you know, I guess looking back, my dad didn't want to have anything to do with this, you know, my mom having me put in treatment because it's like, oh my God, my daughter is an addict. What am I going to do? My daughter has got
right.
a problem. Right.
So right.
He kind of backed off. And then when I got into the industry of substance abuse, oh my God, I saw a whole nother world of stigma and how people with you know, like talking about us four women being professional. And, you know, obviously we're sober now, but before that, people are in this that are successful. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about that they have a problem, because if they do, then they might not be followed anymore. They might not, people might not like them anymore. And so they stay quiet. And so what I've seen is a lot, what I see is like people changing the name of it to person in long-term recovery, this and that. Like, I feel like it, I think it's being more focused on like, why do we have to change the names and change all of these things versus just accepting, like, I don't know how to put a substance in my body. I have a thing called alcoholism or addiction, and there is a solution for it. And I'm in the solution now. We don't have to talk, like, change the name of it. And so I think stigma has actually gotten worse, to be honest with you. I think that more people are talking about it. But I think changing the name and stuff, just, I think it puts more light on it, to be honest with you.
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, I think sometimes, and, you know, I've had many conversations about what you're referencing, and I think sometimes, you know, something that might bristle someone who's in long-term recovery and has identified themselves a certain way for so long, you know, it might make us bristle. But on the other hand, you know, I think the other side of that argument could be, if it's more, you know, palatable language and, you know, a cleaner narrative for people to be accepting of sort of a medical description of, you know, what we all have experienced. You know, I was, at first I was kind of like you, like I didn't like that much, but I've kind of come around to it, because, you know, I feel like people, however they can accept that this is not a moral failure, that this is a legitimate medical issue. You know what I mean?
Now,
so I don't know. I mean, I totally understand what you're saying.
Right. I think if we're talking about informing and educating people on what this looks like, and that it's not because we're bad people, we have a disease, and we educate them, I'm absolutely all for that. That's 100%.
Yeah.
I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I don't care. If it makes them more comfortable to say I'm a person in long-term recovery than I'm an alcoholic, call me what you want to, but just understand that I'm not a bad mother.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I never was. I love my children just as much when I couldn't take care of them as I do today, you know, when they're all like running around in designer clothes and going to private schools.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think I heard a lady talking about step one, very vividly, or very, it resonated with me, because when I was using, or when I was doing in my codependency or whatever I was doing at the time, you could hook me up to a lie detector test and I wasn't going to drink or use that day. Right. Like, every moral, like, in value I had, I was like, no, I'm not going to do this today. I'm going to stay away from it. I'm going to take care of my responsibilities. You could have hooked me up. And then an hour later I was doing it. Right. It wasn't because I didn't believe that I wasn't, didn't want to use. Yes.
Right. We learned all about that.
Well, though, there's so much more going on, like, you know, just for me also studying the brain for so long, too, I just found it so interesting that it's more than just, you know, I don't want to use today, of course, but there's more going on there. I even tell my clients this now, when they say, why did I use? What happened? You know, like, there's so much, you know, that's going on, not only emotionally, but physically, mentally, and also it depends on, you know, what your thought habits are and what's going on, your self-esteem, and, you know, do you have support? I mean, it's beyond just
and the genetic and emotional disposition that, you know, that we talked about a lot last week. I mean, it's like when the cards are stacked against you, they just are.
Right. Oh my gosh. I know, it's so multi-layered. So for our audience listening, you guys, if you know, just so we, you know, can offer some tips or tools for people, if there's anyone listening out there that, you know, has a family member that is suffering or that wants guidance or advice, what would you tell somebody to do as the first step? You know, or how would they address their loved one to kind of get help?
So I think, this is Christina. Thank you for asking that. And it's a really important question. Families suffer in silence, and they suffer so much longer than they need to. Do you know, I, you know, a while ago, I had an intervention scheduled, and, you know, a young man died of a fentanyl overdose, like 8 hours before the intervention, right? So, the family, it's just heartbreaking, right? Families can wait
too long out of fear and not knowing how to help. So I think number one, if you're concerned or you think you should be concerned, or maybe you don't know what's happening or what is concerning, just reach out to, you know, a therapist, a psychiatrist, even a general practitioner, or there are 12-step meetings or 12-step programs, which even if that isn't of interest to you, there's resource there, whether it's a minister or a priest or, you know, some sort of community. But the first thing is to just reach outside your family system and ask for help from somebody or confide in somebody. There are professionals, addiction professionals all over the country. Obviously, Full Circle Intervention, happy to offer resources to people that might be suffering. And in regards to talking to the one that you love most.
That's good.
I think the most radical gift is just to say the truth. And the truth is, I love you and I'm not okay losing you to a 100% treatable disease. I don't know how to help you. And so I'm going to find out how to help myself and how to help you. And once I figure that out, I'll let you know.
That's great.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but just to keep it super
simple. No, that's absolutely perfect.
What is the old saying, Christina? The truth will set you free, but it might piss you off first, and that's okay. You know, I mean, I've talked to lots of families, too, about, you know, it's okay if they have a reaction. It's okay, you know, because no one that's in the middle of an active, you know, addictive disorder is going to be like, Thank you so much.
Right.
You know, can we go to Nordstrom's on the way to treatment?
That's right. That's exactly
I want to share with y'all my story really quick. I was talking to a family today, and when I turned 19, my mom tricked me into going to treatment. She didn't do a formal intervention, but she tricked me and said we were going shopping, and I ended up in front of a large psychiatric hospital. And I remember sitting in there, and she said, I said, I hate you. And she said, well, I'd rather you hate me than to watch you die. And I tell families all the time, you know, a lot of people say you have to wait until the addict is ready. And for me and my story, had my mom waited until I was ready, I might not be sitting here on a podcast with three other powerful women sober for 28 years.
That's exactly right.
So I don't believe that you just have to wait until the addict is ready or the alcoholic is ready. I think you can reach out at any time.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
And I just
want to
second that. I think that's one of the most deadly myths out there in regards to addiction, by the way. We can help raise bottoms. But, you know, by the way, in regards to intervention, that's about that traditional model of intervention. It's all about strategizing. That's part of the intervention, is strategizing the addict's pattern of use so you can hit them like right at the right time. But the thing is, right, the thing is, when a family calls me for help, somebody in that family is ready for help. The person that's calling me is ready for intervention, right? I don't need the addict ready for intervention. I need the family ready. And it never made sense to me to say to a family, well, call me back when your loved one has hit bottom. First of all, I don't even know what that means, but, you know, call me back when your loved one has hit bottom.
Right.
You continue to suffer, right? Let the addict hit bottom and then call me and then I will help you. That made no sense. That's why I changed the model. That made no sense. Somebody, right? Somebody wants help in that family system and it's my duty to answer it. Anyway.
Go time.
So,
right. Yeah. I love that. Love that. Thank you, ladies. Thank you for all your wisdom.
Thank you so much for having us. This was really fun.
Yes. So fun. So fun. Listen, where can our listeners find y'all if they need to get in touch with one of you? Do you have a website or phone number?
Yes, it is FullCircleRecoveryCenter.com.
FullCircleRecoveryCenter.com. Okay. Yeah, and we're going to have it awesome. Up on our site, and we're going to have all the information on you guys on our podcast page, too.
Perfect. Yes, our number should be included.
Great. Thank y'all again. And we're almost out of time, but Erica and I always ask our guest just quickly, first answer that comes to your mind. Deep dive question. Are you ready? I'll start with you,
ready.
Anika. Well, What is your superpower, Anika?
Authenticity.
Love it. Christina, what's your superpower?
Vulnerability, I was going to say.
Oh, those are so good.
Love both of those.
I'm telling you, I've gotten chill bumps many times during this interview, and that rarely happens to me. So,
I know.
So good.
I know. Oh, I hope we all get to meet in person soon.
Yes.
And thank you, ladies, for your time and your presence and for all the work you do. God bless you both.
Thank you.
God bless
you so much. Have a good day.
And to our listeners out there, thank you so much for joining Rewiring Your Life. I noticed today that we have a 5-star review status on Apple. So thank you so much for that, listeners. And until next week, be well.